Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Since I saw them perform live at our Tiny Desk Showcase in July, I've been eager to sit down with the members of Soften to talk about their music. In speaking with them, I was pleased to find very talented musicians who not only play very well together, but who genuinely seem to care about and for each other. Led by the songwriting and powerful vocal presence of Brianna Kelly, Soften's album Seen and Unseen presents a personal exploration of musical dynamism that could only be achieved through mutual trust, respect, and collaboration. I'm in the studio with Brianna Kelly, John Delvo, and Andrew Aragon of Soften. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Where do we start? There's so much to talk about. Let's talk about the name of the band and how that has changed in the past couple months.
I guess the band started off as my own name, Brianna Kelly, because when we got together, we were just kind of learning my songs that I'd written and had had for a couple of years. And after a while, I think it just kind of became clear that we wanted a band name. I kind of forget the story why we picked...
No, you don't.
Picked Soften.
Yeah, forget the story.
No, because when I saw you guys first perform, you were going under the name Brianna Kelly. And there was, I guess, a bit of an identity crisis where because it had your name, there was this sort of identity of maybe like a singer-songwriter type band, but it really is... about as far removed from that as you can get.
Yeah, I think like after a while we sort of realized that we were becoming a little bit more collaborative in our songwriting and like had formed sort of a sound as a band that went from being like singer-songwritery into like an ensemble of people with like each individual styles that have converged into one thing. I think it was right around the time when we were finishing up the album that we were like, what are we going to do? What are we going to release this under? And then we just, I don't know, I think we just picked Soften because we liked, it just sounded good. And it was like a single word rather than like, I don't know, we just had nothing else that stuck.
The least edgy thing possible.
Was it like
literally
this idea of being a total contrast from your sound? Because you do have, I mean, and actually I want to point out on this because in listening to your album, Seen and Unseen, the sound of the CD is dramatically different from your live performance. That was one of the first things I noticed, is that your live sound is a lot more edgy, I guess is a word, whereas the CD is very clean and polished and lets everything kind of be very present. So was that contrast there in your mind when you were coming up with the name?
Not particularly, no.
Maybe not on purpose. It feels right in retrospect. Like the things that you mentioned to me, but I don't think we weren't necessarily trying to say anything with it. That was like one of the first ones that we suggested, and we did the thing where we're like, well, we got to all sit around and think of a name now, and that never works.
Yeah,
right.
And then like, you know, months went by, and that was like the one that kind of was like, why don't we just do this, you know, and it's kind of stuck since then.
Do you remember the first time you performed under the name Soften?
I think it was the Vita and the Wolf show at Motor.
Oh, yeah, because we had him, like, change the name and everything. It was like, this is official now, so make it work.
I do want to ask you about the songwriting approach that you take for, I guess, your solo work and for Soften. Is it predominantly your solo-type work, or is it much more collaborative?
I think my songs have always come from a very solitary and introspective place, and usually it'll come with a melody. And I'll just, like, build a song around that where I'll just, like, have a melody in my head doing something really mundane, like washing the dishes or riding my bike. Then I'll sit with it and just take it to the guitar. And so the songs for the solo stuff, like, even a lot of the songs that we played started off being, like, very, like, whispery, quiet, lo-fi bedroom stuff. And then I brought it to the band when we first started playing together. I was like, well, here's what I got. Then it just kind of took on a whole new quality of, like, musicianship based on, like, John's playing on the bass and like, Andrew on drums because it started off just the three of us and we were practicing in a big church space, a big empty church. And so to, like, have that big church space where everything was reverbing out and, like, And I think I'd kind of come out of a hard place too, where like there was an air of more aggression in some of the songs than I was used to working with for some of this quiet bedroom stuff. We were just like, well, let's just like vamp it up. And so like there was stuff that started off pretty like gentle. And then once we got all together, it was like, all right, like we'll just turn up the distortion a little bit and go with it. So some of the songs I would have written, and then other songs that were kind of like, I have these pieces and I'm not really sure about the arrangement. And so John's been one of the biggest collaborators in that, as far as like taking the essence of the song and sort of reframing it, where the songwriting like is expounded upon into like more of a cohesive piece of a song, I guess, or a piece of work than just like, I don't know. My songwriting's really simple. It just kind of goes like A-B-A-B. And then John helps me think about things in like a bigger perspective of where to take things to make them more interesting or to have like a spin on them that I wouldn't normally think of.
Now, is this the same band that you had when you made All Things Are Being Made New?
No. I used studio musicians for that one. That was a long process. I started some of those songs like 5 years before I began even recording them. And so I worked on that probably around like 2011, doing tracking of some of the bigger pieces like the piano and the drums and guitar work in a studio. And then I took everything that the producer, his name was Zach, into just GarageBand at home and just did a lot of stuff on my laptop. And then I would send the mixes back to him and then he would make it balanced and sound good. But yeah, I had a studio drummer for that one and a guitar player. And then everything else I did mostly on my own.
So for this album, you said it was predominantly you and John and Andrew putting it together. When did Corey Waddell enter the mix?
It's really weird because I don't really remember. Not because...
He just showed up one day.
Yeah, kind of for no reason other than like I don't really remember it without him. Hmm. Even though we played for a while, just the three of us, but like it seems like it's been the whole time. The very first time we did it, it seemed like, oh, duh. You know, like it was stupid that we hadn't been already.
It completed the sound, I think, in a way.
Yeah, he has a really great way of, like, he can kind of step into any situation musically where things are happening and kind of just, like, do even, like, the tiniest little thing, you know, and it changes everything.
It's the spice in the
recipe. It is the spice,
kinda,
yeah, absolutely. And like,
because he plays with, like, a subtlety and an attention to, like, the rest of the dynamics of the music that it kind of just adds, like, a cohesive glue for the rest of what would have just been, like, a three-piece band.
Yeah. There's very few people that I would want to, like, if I was recording them, just, like, you know, talk, you know, all right, go ahead and do whatever you think would work, and just probably it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the first take is like, oh, yeah, that was perfect. You can go home now. Like, everything he does is just kind of like that kind of just perfect little, like you said, spice. But it's been most of the time now that he's been
Yeah, I think it was right after we, it's basically been about a year since we started, like, inviting him in to, like, take that space and that role and whatnot.
And he's at work right now. He couldn't be here, unfortunately. But I'm trying to make him, like, sound really good to embarrass him as much as possible.
Well, let's talk about the actual recording and production of the album. How did you tackle that?
We're very lucky and very grateful to have some really good friends. And I know a lot of people who helped us out with, like, gear and stuff like that. And we kind of just posted up in my bedroom for a couple months. So everything was tracked. I'm pretty sure, yeah, everything was tracked in my room. We built some bass traps and, like, soundproofing stuff and just kind of posted them up. There's, like, a bunch of unremovable tape stuck all over my walls and ceilings right now that I'm going to have to figure out someday. And we set it up. We tracked drums in a couple days. And then we did guitar and stuff and got vocals and, like, started mixing. And then I lost everything. Then we had to start over. And then...
A blown-up hard drive.
Yeah, my hard drive caught on fire in my computer. So we started it over and just did the whole thing again. Everybody was like, hey, can I use your really expensive stuff for, like, a couple more months? And, yeah, we did it. We recorded. Like, again, we did the drums, did the bass, did the guitars, did the vocals, all in my room. Built a couple, like, gobo things and had everybody's amps sitting up in weird, precarious chairs. And it just came together really well. I don't want to say it was painless because nothing is, but, like, getting good stuff out of it was. You know, being in there for hours a day and, like, you know, being, like, hungry and being like, well, let's just record that one more time. You've already done it 60 times is tough for anyone. But, like, at the end of each day, like, listening back to what we had was just, like, I didn't do much. The people who were performing and like getting the performances out of people was like second nature. It was awesome. It was great.
Did it feel different the second time around?
Kind of.
Yeah.
In what way?
We kind of had to look at the first take, quote unquote, I just made air quotes, as just like really nice demos. It gave us a chance to hear the songs in a way that we really hadn't yet, because we'd only been playing them live up to that point. And it's like, oh, cool, we got some ideas for these songs now. And so what wound up actually becoming Seen and Unseen really took a step forward from what it would have been with the first thing. I mean, we had a whole song on there that probably wouldn't have been on the first one.
Yeah, we had the five songs, or six songs, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think we were kind of torn between whether we wanted it to be a set of demos, like here's an EP that is just like, here's what we sound like so that we could book more shows. Torn between that and then being a work, like an album, something that's representative of like a season of a time of themes or, you know, a cohesive feel to it. So after we kind of lost the album, we were just kind of like, all right, like, what do we do now? And we were all just kind of like in really good spirits. We're like, okay, like, let this be a learning experience. Now it's going to be easier to track. And then it also gave us space to put one more song on the album, Shiver in Your Soul, that wouldn't have made it onto the six song first one. And that's kind of a song that is deeply personal for me, but then also became sort of the glue for the rest of the album, in my opinion, where there's like certain motifs and themes that were all kind of tied together in it that made it feel like a cohesive work.
Yeah, we built that song in the studio, pretty much like sitting next to each other, because it was not, we didn't really have a final form or anything. We had some parts. We didn't know what was going to happen.
And we'd never really played it live.
So it was built collaboratively.
Which is a very interesting thing, because her saying like it was like one of the most personal, like close to her chest ones.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
But it was like, I think the whole project, even just us being together and knowing each other, is like sort of based around like that vulnerability. Like I've known John for a while, but we all just happened.
Yeah.
That's the best way to explain anything to do with this entire endeavor. It's just been
happening.
Yeah.
And
we've been just like, all right, let's go. It's as if we were all just kind of wandering in the woods and went, oh, hey.
You're walking on the same path? Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Kind of.
Right. Yeah.
Let's do it together.
When that serendipity of you guys coming together, and then maybe I just can't get beyond it, but that losing of the first version of that album, it's kind of tragic, but at the same time, there's got to be this sense of, okay, we've got the hard part done. Now we just have to redo what we've already done. And there's maybe a little bit more freedom and comfort and feeling of almost the what do we have to lose kind of feeling.
Yeah. Kind of, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was the point, like, that we decided to, like, let's just make something really great and just do it. And I retrospectively think that was like one of the best things that happened to us, was the ability to do that from that.
Because it also was like a chance for us to experience like a hardship, a loss as a band that happened pretty early on, that kind of like helped us even bond more together. Like, all right, well, that sucked, but what are we going to do? Well, we got to stick together and keep busy and put our heads down and churn this thing out.
Yeah.
I want to listen to a track from the album. Let's listen to Breaking My Bones.
Never thought of myself here before. Drinking on some medicine, fades on the floor.
I try to say a prayer, but all you hear is a ticking of a clock in your movements in the mirror. Yeah, we talk and talk and talk and try to make some sense, but sometimes we're cleaner if at first we're made mess. Yeah, once was a time when I believed in words, but now just to make me whole again. I said you're breaking my bones just to make me whole. You're breaking my bones just to make me whole again. Yeah, you're breaking my bones just to make me whole. You're breaking my bones just to make me whole again, again.
The musicianship on the album, as good as it is, because there's some really clean production. Kudos to you for the way it was done. There's some
Thanks.
Great guitar work. Sometimes I'm catching some slide guitar, or it's at least a regular guitar played with a slide. There's really nice mix of dynamics and the music. But as wonderful as that is, it's often overshadowed by your voice. Your voice is just powerful and has so much personality. Throughout the album, I'm picking up essences of other fantastic voices. And, you know, there's songs like Returns to Me, where I think you sound like K.D. Lang, or Breaking My Bones, like we just heard. I think there's a bit of a Chrissy Hynde sound in there. Or Shiver in Your Soul, Sinead O'Connor. See Me, I'm hearing Bjork. You know, are these the kind of voices that you grew up with and the ones you try to emulate, or what's your goal when you're putting vocal tracks down?
Wow. Oh. I think, interestingly, like you've mentioned all female artists, and the ones that have been the most influential have actually been men, like Freddie Mercury has been a huge one. Listened to a lot of Queen in the car with my mom growing up. And just was stunned by his range and his vibrato and, like, his force behind what he did. And then I listened to Jeff Buckley when I was in my early teens and just had never heard a voice like that. His control and, like, the way that he could just wail and then kind of, like, swell and back into, like, this, like, sultry whisper. And I don't know. I just listened to the radio growing up, too. So I really enjoyed, like, Alicia Keys and, like, really soulful mainstream pop stuff, Christina Aguilera, and like, I don't know, I just found myself wanting to emulate that. Oh yeah, Celine Dion was a big one too. Just like these big, powerful voices that could kind of swell back into this really deeply vulnerable place as well to emulate a really personal feeling.
It's so amazing that you say that, because that's exactly the mentality or the feeling that I got from the album, but specifically, I hear that in the song Snow. The contrast between the loud and the soft. I had this image in my head, and I know this is totally poetic and nerdy of me to say. I picture this, like, ton of bricks being suspended by a spider web, because there's this bit where it's nothing but your voice, and it's just holding everything together with that single note, and then it lets go, and everything just explodes beyond that, and there's just such a wonderful emotion in that song. It just really impacted me when I heard it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So is there a tour, or what's going on in your world to support the effort of this album?
We're talking to a couple different people right now about maybe getting the album out to a broader audience, whether it be nationally or internationally even. Right now, we've got a couple shows lined up, the next one being Tuesday with
Mar.
Our great friends Mar. That'll be the Comet for their residency, which is great. And then pretty much just doing that, doing shows and playing as much as possible, and obviously selling stuff to like allow us to keep doing that. So we've got that, and then we've got a couple dates that we're working on with our really, really, really good friends Beams from Canada, and that will be our second tour in March, and then kind of keep doing it as much as we're able, like tour here, tour there, a couple weekend dates, but really just do it till we can't. And then, you know, if the can't never comes, then not stop.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to kind of like be like, okay, we made the album and like, let's move on and like, let's work on a new one. But I think there's some, we have to like keep in perspective that a very, very small percentage of our friends and people that we know have heard it, and the songs are good and we want people to hear it. So we're trying to like work on some more digital distribution stuff right now because all we have is the Bandcamp. So that would be like the next step is just continuing to build on our relationships with bands outside of Cincinnati and hoping to have a couple shows that take us on a different circuit to get us a little bit more, I guess, exposure. We are working on some new songs and we're just kind of taking it song by song and then seeing like when it would make sense to begin to record those and to integrate them into our live sets.
When we first started talking, I'd mentioned the big disparity between your recorded sound and your live sound. When you do perform live, how conscious is that? How purposeful is that to have a bigger sound, or is that just something that sort of happens again through serendipity?
I don't think it is so much conscious in that we go in like, you know, like football players do with a huddle and just like, get pumped, yeah. it's more, there's a lot of, at least for me, there's a lot of eye contact and just like listening and just feeling it out, because it, much like what John was saying earlier about Corey being able to fill little spaces and then just kind of vanish, it's a lot of subtle communication and just like listening and letting things breathe. So in essence, that's kind of what we're doing with everything and just allowing things to exist as they do. And I also think that like with live as opposed to recorded stuff, there's also, you can do more in your controlled studio environment. You can make it as pretty and embellished or as not. But with live, we have to deal with our, you know, drums falling apart, like at our solo release show, or straps falling off, and just whatever the world throws at you. So just more raw.
I actually didn't know that there was a disparity between the album sound and our live sound, because most of the time when we're playing live, we're just kind of focused on like one another and like making sure everything's in tune and it's not going to be bad, and then just kind of having that sort of raw experience together as performers. Yeah, I just haven't really like sat down with the album and like listened through it all the way through again and have compared it to our live sound, because unless there's like high quality video or something, you don't really know what you sound like live.
When you said you have a few new song ideas, are these upcoming shows giving you an opportunity to kind of experiment with them and play with them and see what direction they go in?
Yeah, I think so. We've had like one consistent new one that we've been playing for the past, I don't know, a few months that just kind of came together also pretty collaboratively. I was like, I just have these parts, I don't know. So we've been playing that, and we haven't even really had set lyrics for it. I just kind of make stuff up when we're performing. Yeah, I don't know. We just wanted to play it, and it's better to sometimes just take that risk than to have everything like perfect and set up. And it's interesting with like the songs we're doing now. Like usually, I start with a melody and then have to like build lyrics around them and then take that into an instrument. But with these new songs, they're kind of coming from a different place in me personally, where I'm not experiencing some great heartache or anguish right now. So they're just kind of a little more lighthearted and playful, not needing to express some big, meaningful, deep truth, but kind of just representative of the place of stability and security that we're in now as a band.
Well, since you said that, that makes me curious. Do you feel like at times you need to write these things down? You need to produce these songs to reach some catharsis? Or are you now just kind of doing it because you want to, because you're enjoying it and having fun with it?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit of both. Like I still am holding on to some solo music stuff right now that's been kind of hard to distinguish. Like when I do write a song, like, is this for solo stuff or is this for the band? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that crossover is not that important. It's like, okay, well, I can play it this version of this song when I play solo, which is much more subdued and quiet and reverbed out and minimal. And then I can play a different version of it with the band. And there's not really a need to draw those distinctions.
We just need to talk about Corey more. I can't overstate his contribution to this enough. In all four of us, I think it goes back to kind of what Andrew was saying and what we were all talking about how this is all just kind of happening. And I've been playing in bands forever, and we all kind of have. And this is one of those things that's just like, oh, wow. And I don't think any of us are really sure about how or why it happened or at what point did it become something. Kind of like how the live sound, you know, you said there's this like kind of difference between these songs being performed live and the way they wound up on the record, and that just kind of happens. Each live performance, there's like little differences, and for anybody there's going to be that, but for ours I think especially too, you know, there's no like it has to be everything, you know what I mean, everything's got to be in its right place. It does, but like we kind of fall into the right place naturally, and then whatever else happens again happens.
I think as a band we're letting this whole thing take us, but acknowledging the fact that it's something super special and we want to share it with other people. And that, like, it goes beyond just like whatever we perform. It's more so like Mar, our friends, we want to support them. We want to help everyone who helped us make the record, because it was more than just us four. Like we had so many people loan us gear, play things. Like you said, the
slide.
Yeah, Steve was phenomenal.
From Young Heirlooms.
Yeah, and
dealing with drums for 3 days in the house, you know,
neighbors for
yeah, not calling the police,
it's like so it's way bigger than us, and I think we're very aware of that and just how much we want to put as much good energy out there.
I think part of if there is anything representative of the name, I think it's for us to be soft at heart toward one another and to be humble and continue to just pour our hearts into this.
Well, Brianna, John, Andrew, thanks for coming by and being on Local Exposure. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I want to close by listening to the track See Me from the album. Is there anything you want to tell me about this song before we listen to it?
Oof. It's deeply personal, and it's really hard to talk about in a public way. I've wanted to for a long time, and I'm just not there yet. Oh, yeah, I mean, I try to leave stuff open for interpretation, but I'll just let it be a song for anybody who needs to stand up to bullies.
I can tell to the smile.
Soften's album, Seen and Unseen, is available for purchase from their Bandcamp page or at one of their upcoming live shows. For links to more information about both of those things, stop by wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. You can find more great local music stories when you subscribe to Local Exposure at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to leave a comment or a review on iTunes, that can help others find us too. This interview was recorded by Dave Shermer, thanks Dave, and produced by me, Jim Nolan. Until next time.